Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're 101.3 KPCG, and we are online at kpcg.fm. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm. We send out some tweets about programming. And if you'd like to send us an email, we're happy to see those. Comments at kpcg.fm. And we'll take a look at those comments. I got ahead of myself because we are going to talk about headlines. You can email us headlines too. That's fine.
It has happened.
It has happened.
We've talked about them too.
Yeah, and sometimes they're really interesting and unique. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here today as well. Grant, I have to tell you, this is a personal story. The listeners may, you know, if you're not interested, you can just bear with me. I've talked in the past about here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. I had heard the legend of there being albino deer.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think it was real, and then somebody sent me a picture a while ago, and it is. Last night, I'm turning onto the campus about 6:45. Right in front of me, there she is.
No way.
This beautiful albino, mostly white deer. And if I hadn't known that there was one on the campus, I would have thought probably it was like a giant dog or something because of coloring. And it just looked at me, and I looked at her, I assume. And and then we had a moment, and then she ran off into the woods. It was like seeing Moby Dick.
I can't believe she was out roaming around at 6:45. That's plenty of daylight left.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was amazing. It was an amazing thing. And so I've never seen one in person before. and now I did. And so, it was pretty epic. I wanted to get a picture, but I couldn't get my phone out fast enough. and so she was on her way, but it was like coming face to face with Bigfoot or something. It was unique, a special memory that I have now.
Yeah. My guess was always that it was a guy on security at 2 a.m. shining his lights, and he's like half awake and kind of puts the light on the deer and makes it look brighter than it actually is. But apparently it's real.
Yeah. And I guess too, it's good that I saw it in the daylight, because at night maybe you wouldn't, you know, be able to tell as well that it was albino. But I was on my way to a spokesman's club meeting. If people aren't familiar with that, some of us are we have a spokesman's club here. It's something Herbert Armstrong did for many years in the Worldwide Church of God, and now continues in the Philadelphia Church of God. And so it's a chance you get together and you give different speech assignments and so forth. And so I had a speech last night, and when I came into club, I told the fellows, I said, this might be a sign that I saw this albino deer on my way, and I don't know what it means. Like, it could go well, or it could be a disaster, but I feel like something happened here.
So and what transpired afterward at the club then?
It went well. Went well for me, so and everybody, but I felt like, yeah, you know, did a good job. So I think if you see the white deer, it may mean that good fortune's on the way. Of course, I don't believe in that stuff. Of course, I'm making a little bit of a joke here, but it was an interesting thing. I was like, wow, maybe this means something for me.
Yeah, it could have easily been someone else who saw it. So there, you were in the right place at the right time, and there's at least something to be said about that.
So if you see an albino deer, you know, good things are on the way, potentially. I don't know, but it was interesting. I know some of our listeners maybe have heard us talk about that occasionally, that the potential of that deer, and maybe it's more common than I realize. I don't know, but I've never seen one in person before, and it was pretty cool, so I was glad to see that. You never know what you're going to see out here on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. Lots of wildlife. It's peaceful out here,
mm-hmm.
And so the animals feel pretty, I think, pretty calm and comfortable, and there's actually a while ago, I was walking by, we have a lake just outside the studio here, and there's a bunch of ducks, and I had a duck start walking over towards me pretty aggressively, and I thought, he must be defending his turf or something. So I got out of that area, and I was talking to somebody later about it, and they said, oh no, he wants food. Like, people feed that duck all the time. And so the duck, I can see why he was confused. He's like, well, feed me. And I was running the other way. So everything's friendly.
That duck has chased me off before, too. The one with, like, the red splotch on its, near its face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the same one. That it kind of follows around all the Canada geese.
Yeah.
Canada geese, not Canadian geese, by the way. But it just, for some reason, it thinks it fits in with the geese.
Yeah.
And the geese, they're quite unique as well, because they obviously they leave their excrement all over our soccer field, and so we have to play in that too. But whenever they're crossing the road, they have not a fear in the world that a car might speed up and try to hit them. They will literally just move out of the way when you're a couple feet away from them. So,
yeah.
So it does indicate that people on campus are pretty nice to the animals.
I almost hit a turkey the other day. A bunch of turkeys crossing the road. I'm like, turkeys? Thanksgiving dinner. Right,
if you
there.
Hit that one, you could have actually benefited from it.
Yeah. The kids, by the way, the kids refer to that duck that you were talking about as Darth Maul duck.
Right.
Because he looks like the villain from that Star Wars, Darth Maul.
That's
so.
A brilliant nickname.
Anyway, that's the end. I apologize to the listeners. That's the end of the wildlife diatribe there. There are other things to talk about today, more important things. TheTrumpet.com today, top story. Make sure you check it out. China's new gold-backed oil benchmark to deal blow to U.S. dollar. This is by Jeremiah Jacques, who keeps an eye on that region. New financial instrument gives oil-exporting nations their long-sought alternative to the petrodollar. It's, if you know much about that, the dollar is pegged to oil, or oil is pegged to the dollar, I guess. So if you're trading in oil, you got to do it with the dollar, and that gives us a lot of power. And if we don't have that, and we're not looked at it as this global currency anymore, our free spending debt days are going to be over.
That's right, because no other nation seems to basically revel in the debt like America does. We can't do that anymore if we don't have these certain advantages. It doesn't seem like the dollar is backed by gold like it used to be, and there are a lot of different nations forming these different trade alliances right now. There's that one with like Brazil and Venezuela and Russia, I think it is, or China.
BRICS.
Yeah. I don't know how good they are right now, but still, it does show you that people are looking elsewhere that from the U.S. A lot of those nations are naturally hostile against the U.S., so they don't want to do business with the U.S. anyway. And the more debt we build up, why not? Why not turn elsewhere? Because we just are getting less and less reliable in that area.
And, you know, obviously every nation wants to rise, and the U.S. has been on top for quite some time now, and so people are always looking to knock the U.S. down a peg. Related to that top story at thetrumpet.com, a write-up by Robert Morley, Death Blow to the Dollar. And that ties in, too, with the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that coming up here in a little bit. Also, again, you can find the archives at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com. And a part of what he talked about today was this comment that somebody had written up in one of the papers over there in the UK, basically saying that, you know, the U.S. was able to overcome these hurricanes because of our wealth and our technology. You know, like it's this battle between nature and man, and because of our great wealth and advanced technology, we can, you know, overcome everything. And but the point that's brought out is, for one, eventually things get severe enough where you can't, and the Bible talks about that. But then also, what wealth? The U.S. doesn't have any wealth. We have the illusion of wealth, but we have a lot of debt.
It is true, on the one hand, that we don't have hurricanes that kill 11,000 people, like I think we talked about one that hit in Central America or the islands south of us. But still, the damage is substantial, and we're going to take out a couple hundred billion dollars more in debt to pay off the damage in Harvey. Who knows how much with Irma? Where does that money come from when we're over $20 trillion in debt already? We just print more money, and we think we can get away with it, but at some point, certain nations can just ask for their money back, and we'd be in a lot of trouble.
Here's a headline from CNS News related to the debt. They say it's official, the debt tops $20 trillion for the first time. I say at the close of business on September 7th, it was last Thursday, according to the Daily Treasury Statement for Friday, the total debt of the federal government was, we'll just say, just under $20 trillion, so I don't have to read that giant number. And the portion of it subject to the legal limit set by Congress was right around there as well. After President Trump signed the legislation suspending the debt limit, the total debt immediately jumped over $20 trillion, and the portion of it subject to the limit jumped as well. So because they suspended it, they just went on a, spending spree. They should call it, that's why they call it suspend, because it's for spending. Now we can spend more.
Yeah, apparently that's what they think that word means, because yeah, it does seem like that's what happens every time the debt ceiling is, I guess it's suspended, or they push back when the debt has to, or the budget has to be balanced, however that works. It's a bit complicated, but Mr. Trump made a deal with the Democrats on that one that surprised a lot of people. It is probably pretty smart of him to do that, though, because people were just so gridlocked in Congress that eventually you have to move forward. You have to try to reach across and at least appear conciliatory. He's trying to unite people. I just don't know how well that's going to work.
Best way to do it is to give people money to spend.
That'll make them very happy, at least for a few days.
Everybody's happy. And, you know, and I can understand, I guess, if you just look at it humanly, you'd think, well, what difference does it make, you know, $20 trillion, $21 trillion, $22 trillion? I don't think anyone's under the impression that we're going to pay it back. Mm. I think it's just, well, this is the way it is.
I wonder if there's a way that, I've always wondered this, if there's a way we could swing some deals to eliminate some of that debt, because obviously we owe different people, entities, nations, a certain amount of money, and it all piles up to a huge number like that. Why not swing some deals and eliminate some of it, possibly?
Yeah, I don't know. And then, of course, that number doesn't include all the entitlements either, I don't think, and that's a huge thing, social security. It's always a hard one for me to say. And, you know, other things. Of course, states have cut pensions. We've seen that. And people that expected to get a certain pension, then they get cut. It gets cut down because the state's broke. So isn't that the way it always goes, I guess? If you're at sort of the bottom of the money pile or the money fall, like a waterfall, you get it trickles at the bottom.
Right.
It's gushing at the top, but when it comes back down to you, it's not as much. So anyway, yeah, the U.S. is doesn't have the money that it thinks it has. The debt is extremely high and getting higher all the time. So... And that's an interesting thing. That'll be interesting to see with President Trump. He's made a reputation as a businessman to some extent, and it'll be interesting to see what he does. But as of now, it's just more and more spending. Maybe that's all they can do at this point. I don't know.
He has said that he is great with debt, which is maybe not the thing that you want to hear him say, because dealing with a debt that large and really – It's like a complete dead weight on the country. I don't know how we even pay those different things that we've promised to these Americans who have retired or they're disabled or people on welfare. I don't know how it's possible. I guess we are paying a lot in taxes now. Maybe there are times where money is printed off, but I don't have several years to sit down and try to figure out how that all works.
You know, speaking of taxes, Houston residents, I think, they said they're going to have a 9% tax increase.
Ugh.
And potentially if they pass that. So, you know, thanks a lot. I mean, my house is flooded. Now I've got to pay more in taxes. So anyway, it's, yeah, U.S. is paying record taxes, but spending record amounts of money too. So anyway, that all ties into some of the stuff that's going on today at thetrumpet.com. The top story, China's new gold-backed oil benchmark to deal blow to U.S. dollar. If you like long titles, that's for you. And then also the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury, talking about some of the hurricanes and people's response to it. And, of course, if you look at that book that we've talked about recently, Why Natural Disasters, you would hope that when people see natural disasters, they'd start thinking about maybe looking at God's Word, seeing if there's room for us to make some changes, and to have people come out and defiantly say, yeah, our technology is good enough. We have enough wealth. We're fine. I don't think that bodes well for our future.
It seems like it's just inviting a stronger punch from the weather. That's really the attitude that we have, where even when we get devastated, we get shown how puny we are. We continue to say, well, we're strong. We can rise up from this like no other nation, and we'll be okay like nothing had ever happened. That kind of attitude's not going to make God very happy.
And Stephen Fleury points out on the Trumpet Daily Show that, you know, it's like the Tower of Babel, where they're saying, yeah, the flood can't get us. We'll just build this big tower. So we'll see. Pretty interesting. I want to make a note here about something coming up at Armstrong Auditorium this week. For those that are in the local listening area, of course, we have quite a few listeners around the globe. Probably aren't going to be able to make it over from Australia in time. But for those that are more local, there is an event at Armstrong Auditorium this Thursday night, September the 14th, 7:30 p.m. It's the Oklahoma City Ballet. Usually a lot of the acts come in, they're international. This is a local one, so that's kind of neat. It says, for one night only, Armstrong Auditorium is presenting area audiences another opportunity to see this classic of American ballet. As we get the cowgirl and the champion roper back in the saddle again, headlining the program is Stravinsky's acclaimed ballet, The Firebird, re-choreographed by Oklahoma's own Robert Mills, artistic director for Oklahoma City Ballet. So that's a local production. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be here at Armstrong Auditorium this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. I think there's still a few tickets available. ArmstrongAuditorium.com. Check it out. I will be there.
I am intrigued to see what the turnout is, because generally in years past, the ballets have brought the most people. However, this one's not from Russia or Mongolia, so I don't know if maybe the lack of the exotic appeal will turn some people away. But this one is like uniquely American from what I understand. There are a lot of American frontier type ballet pieces in there, and that should be pretty exciting to see. That would actually appeal to me personally more than the other ones did.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they went and toured Russia. What the Russians would think. They're like, oh wow,
what is Oklahoma? Yeah. Don't even know what that is.
What is this? What is it that you're doing? But so that's this Thursday at 7:30 p.m. You can go to ArmstrongAuditorium.com for tickets. And, of course, then you can also see the upcoming concerts this year. There's quite a few to select if you're interested in one or several of them. You can get tickets there. And then if you listen for Music for Life this week, or check out the archives of that at kpcg.fm, Ryan Malone, the host there, he has an interview with the Oklahoma City Ballet and talks about this concert, so you can get an idea of what it's going to be like, a little preview, and see if you're interested in going. And Grant will be shaking hands in the lobby for everyone that would like to be there. Right? You'll be down there?
I hope so. I hope I'm there. I'm going to try to get a ticket if there's any left.
Going to wear your cowboy boots?
That's a good idea. I might as well show up.
Do you have cowboy boots?
No, I'd have to get some of those too.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I guess I'm not deeply Southern Oklahoman. I'm very proud to be from here, but I've never lived on a ranch, so I'm kind of different from some people in that way.
Right. You had no real need for the cowboy boot.
Not really.
It's funny, back when I was living in Wisconsin, there was a guy when I was a teenager that moved up to the area, and we played on a couple of sports teams together, and we were at this particular tournament one weekend, and it was around Madison area where we stopped to get some gas, and he originally was not from Wisconsin. He was from a different area where they did wear boots, so it was more of a common thing. and in Wisconsin, people didn't typically wear cowboy boots. It could happen, but it wasn't the norm. And we were in a gas station, and some local teens spotted him. And I remember they said, "Hey, boots." So I always remember that one. They picked him out real quick that he was not local.
It's really funny when I see people who are wearing cowboy boots, no matter what else they're wearing. They might be wearing like those short jean shorts, and they're still wearing cowboy boots as well. It's just something that they wear all the time, whether they have jeans on or not.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, you can bring your boots, I guess, for the Oklahoma City Ballet. That's coming up on Thursday again. That's at 7:30 p.m. So check it out. Historical note for today. This is interesting, and it ties into a book that we're talking about, Great Again. In 1215, on this day, English barons serve ultimatum on King John, ultimately leading to the Magna Carta. The Magna Carta, or the Great Charter in Latin, was agreed by King John of England on the 15th of June in 1215, the first drafted by the Archbishop of Canterbury to make peace between the unpopular king and a group of rebel barons. It promised the protection of church rights, protection for the barons from illegal imprisonment, access to swift justice, and limitations on feudal payments to the crown. It was to be implemented through a council of 25 barons. There was a few back and forth things that happened with it, but it did become an official document there. And it's one of the most important documents in history because it established the principle that everyone is subject to the law, even the king, and it guarantees the rights of individuals, the right to justice and the right to a fair trial. And, of course, it was a foundation in some ways for individual rights in some of America's founding documents as well. So very important there, and it kind of got started on this day in 1215 when they began to, the English barons served the ultimatum on King John, leading again to that Magna Carta. So the thing that was so unique about it was that, you know, you have a system where you have a king, but this was saying, okay, everyone is subject to the rule of law, and that's very important, and that's a lot of what the U.S. system is based on. But as this booklet points out great again that we're discussing, the second chapter of it is on America's real enemy, and it really begins by talking about how a lot of people are trying to tear down the Constitution today. And we talked yesterday some about how many younger people that have come through the school systems haven't been taught about the Constitution. And so it's easy to have a negative viewpoint about the Constitution, particularly if that's what your group thinks. But what people are, if they get rid of it, what they're getting rid of is the rule of law. And that guarantees the most equal system you'll find. You get rid of that, and then what? You're subject to a dictator. But that's what a lot of people are calling for, is getting rid of that U.S. Constitution.
We do have to think about how rare our Constitution and documents like the Magna Carta are, because without those, it does make it easy for a tyrant to say, well, I don't like you today, off with your head. And that's it. There's no law to it. It's just whatever that one guy says, and it's totally fine. Those principles of religious freedom, that's even a root cause for why so many people moved from Britain across the Atlantic to America in the first place, and then eventually they had the Revolutionary War and split, because people are always searching for more freedom to express themselves, more freedom to safely practice their beliefs. And nowhere outside of America has that been so possible, to where you don't have to fear what you believe. I think that has broken down under the last administration somewhat, but still, definitely you have a right to a fair trial, at least if people try to persecute you for your beliefs.
There's this chapter here in Great Again, the second chapter, and again, you got to get this book. It's free at thetrumpet.com, and it talks about a lot of the problems in the U.S., but does give hope as well. And again, the title of this chapter is America's Real Enemy, and the author, Mr. Gerald Fleury, writes this. When he became president, Barack Obama promised his supporters a radical transformation of the U.S. By the end of his first term, some supporters felt the change he promised wasn't coming fast enough. To them, the president explained, quote, "What's frustrated people is that I have not been able to force Congress to implement every aspect of what I said in 2008. He said, well, you know, it turns out that our founders designed a system that makes it more difficult to bring about change than I would like sometimes. This is, and then the Mr. Fleury writes, this is one of several statements the president made showing his distaste for America's Constitution. And so in the last administration in particular, that's where I think it really became, at least more popular in the public. I mean, I'm sure that sentiment's been there for a long time, but it was really talked about coming from the radical left in particular, you know, lamenting that they couldn't force people to do what they wanted. You mean like a dictator or a king or something? Yes, that you can't do that in the U.S., supposedly.
Mr. Fleury also wrote in that booklet how people didn't really know who Barack Obama was before he took office, and even while he was the president, his image was carefully curated. People did not know too much about his background. If they had, it's very possible that he would have never been elected, although we do see communist beliefs becoming more mainstream today. The thing is, with Congress, at least if people are deceived into electing someone, there's still a check on that power, theoretically, unless the president then gets out his phone and his pen.
Which of course happened. And this booklet continues. He characterized that being the president, Obama at the time. He characterized the supreme law of the land as a charter of negative liberties. Says what the states can't do to you, he said. Says what the federal government can't do to you, but doesn't say what the federal government or state government must do on your behalf. Now, that sounds maybe kind of nice to people. But if you stop and think about that, of course it says what the government can't do to you. Because the people that were the founding fathers had come from a system where the government did do to you what it wanted. And, you know, like you mentioned, religious freedom. Does anybody want the government coming in and saying what you can do religiously, what you can't do religiously? No. I mean, he's pandering to an audience that's looking for a handout in a lot of cases. Oh, well, come on. Where's my money? It's not fair. The 1%'s got everything. Well, if you surrender that barrier between, you know, saying, hey, the government can't do this and this and this to you, then you're left with a government that can do anything to you. And like that famous saying is, a government powerful enough to give you everything is powerful enough to take everything away. I think that's President Reagan said that.
Exactly. That's the danger of it. It's also pretty shocking to contrast how it is now with the government having 2 to 3 million employees, a lot of bureaucrats who were able to push through laws, I guess you could call them laws, without really having approval, the president being able to appoint czars instead of actually having Congress approve his appointees in some cases. And we saw Barack Obama doing those things a lot. And then if you look back to the start of the country and out in the Old West where there were hardly even any sheriffs and people would duel in the middle of the street, it's like we had two total extremes before there was even a police force, and people would always be out mining for gold. They'd travel across the country on the gold rush, or they'd come out here to Oklahoma and try to get land. And the Sooners name of the football team actually comes from people trying to sneak out before the gun went off to get their plots of land. People did not want any government involvement in their lives back then, and it was almost to the point where you could shoot someone dead in the street and it would be fine, even if a whole town saw what just happened. Now it's where the government has way too much power. It's not just law enforcement. Law enforcement is actually a good thing, but you have this bureaucracy, way too much money being taken in taxes. You see people being getting in trouble if they don't bake a cake for a homosexual couple, things like that. That's a huge change.
Yeah. I think actually with that case, I think they actually just ruled on it from what I saw, and the Bakers won that one, thankfully.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Because you can't force them to, you know, go against their religious beliefs, as far as I saw. But stay tuned. I'm sure it'll come back around.
One of those businesses I saw, I don't know if it was that one up in Oregon, but they got fined over $100,000, too, and they got their business shut down. Yeah. Just when the government could do something like that, aren't people thinking, well, what if the government one day doesn't like what I believe and what I'm doing? They'll do the same exact thing. They'll ruin my life. Maybe you're all for homosexual and transgender rights now, but what if another administration comes in that will persecute you for believing that? Then how will you feel about it?
Yeah, if you look at a lot of nations that are run by some sort of dictatorial system, what happens when there's a transition of power is it's typically a very, very violent affair.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the new leader comes in, everybody gets relieved of duty and typically relieved of life. I mean, it's a terrible situation, and it happens all the time in these different nations where they're not under the rule of law. They're under a dictatorship. And that's the danger when you start talking about messing with the Constitution too much. I know they do make, you know, amendments here and there, but when you're talking about undermining it, what are you left with? That's the question. It says here in Great Again, there is a reason the Constitution focuses on what the government can't do to you. It aims to restrain despotism and to preserve freedom. That is its great strength, not its fundamental flaw. So you can see how deceptive what was said in the past administration is. You know, it seems like it, you know, they're saying this is the fundamental weakness, that the government can't do all of these things to you, but it's actually the strength of it, that it's restrained from having too much intervention in people's lives. And so it is really an important point. And the book goes on to say, you would think Americans would love the Constitution, but that is not the case in this country anymore. The radical left wants to destroy the Constitution. The radically left Democrats are very hostile to the Constitution, and so are the mainstream media. And I think that's probably not a shocker to anyone if you've turned the TV on in the last 10 years or so.
It's not too surprising that those people are hostile to the Constitution, because the Founding Fathers spoke very strongly about that Constitution being for a religious and a moral people. The people that were ruled, that were under the Constitution, had to be religious. They had to be moral. We see people doing away with religion now and scoffing and scorning it. Any type of immorality is acceptable. It's glorified. Even the more shocking elements of it are laughed at, and it's no big deal at all. Anything goes. We're totally getting away as a people from religion and morality. And of course, the Constitution means nothing at that point, because it can't rule an immoral people.
Right. That's a really a good point, and we'll talk about that a little bit here in just a second. The Constitution and the fact that the radical left and the media are very hostile to it, I think, is evident here in this particular quote. This is from 2011. It's from a CNN blog, Fareed Zakaria. I believe that's how you say his name. I've seen him, I think, a time or two on TV. It says, he wrote this, "The United States Constitution was, as you know, drafted in a cramped room in Philadelphia in 1787 with shades drawn over the windows. It was signed by 39 people." So you get the gist here. He says, "America at the time consisted of 13 states. Congress had 26 senators and 65 representatives. The entire population was about 1% of today's number, 4 million people. America was an agricultural society with no industry, not even cotton gins. The flush toilet had just been invented. These were the circumstances under which this document was written." Okay. Well, the Bible was written long before that. Now, he'd say yes, of course.
Exactly.
But that is still the binding document of documents. I think we all get what he's saying here, that, well, it's old, it's ancient, we're in a modern time now, forget the past. But what about really, you call them the eternal principles? Do they ever go out of style? You know, is murder ever okay? Lying? All the laws of God. Is there ever a time where they're just, they're not relevant anymore? Now, a lot of people would say yes. But the truth is, they're always binding. The Word of God is always binding. And a document like this for the country, you know, for a physical nation, it's as binding today as it was back then. And it's as relevant today as it was back then.
You have to wonder what the fact that the Constitution was signed in a cramped room, and the fact that there was no flush toilet back then, the fact that America was more of an agricultural society, what all that has to do with the document itself and law itself. I don't think any of those points have nothing to do with that at all, but he's just trying to write in a condescending way and put down how America was, when in reality, America was better in almost every way than it is now. We have more comforts today, more conveniences, but we have seen a steep moral decline to go along with that. He's exhibiting some appalling arrogance there, to think that you and your left-wing buddies know more than the people who wrote the Constitution. It's just astounding.
And you get the same sort of mentality here in this writing that I think is in a lot of what you'll hear that's coming out of that side of things, and that is, it's not fact or it's not truth. It's just snark. It's condescending. It's mockery. And you bring up a really good point. You'd like to ask the journalist or whoever, you know, thinks this way and say, what you're telling me is you are wiser than, and then just name all the people that were involved. So you're telling me you're more qualified than John Adams That's what you're saying to me. And, you know, the arrogance is next level for sure.
It's beyond comprehension the amount of arrogance it would take to even imply something like that, which I think even at times they have outright said it too. But, I mean, these men, if you stacked up their accomplishments, the men back at that time at the Constitution, if you stacked up their accomplishments with those today who are criticizing them, it would not even be close. It would be an absolute laughingstock and a shame for these people on the left who think they can just destroy it all. They have nothing to take its place. They just want to get rid of the Constitution. That's the real trend that you see. It's destruction. There's nothing that they think is an improvement that can replace it. They just want to tear it down.
And this journalist here, he concludes his piece by saying, "I'm just suggesting we talk about a few revisions."
Oh.
Well, okay. That sounds okay, I guess, there at the end, but the rest of it, you were saying it was a completely worthless document. So if I'm to believe what he's saying, you know, this document was drafted in a small room with the shades drawn. How does he know? I mean, was he anyway? And maybe that's historically known. I don't know that the shades were drawn, but in any event, so they're in there doing all of this, and you know, oh, the whole thing is such a joke. But maybe we just should revise it a little bit. Well, why? If it's such a joke, like you're making it out to be, then get rid of it.
The whole thing would be irrelevant,
right?
The way he wrote it, and that's why they are just so appallingly deceptive when they do that. They say, well, no, we're just talking about changing this article or that one within the Constitution or within the Bill of Rights. We're not saying to get rid of the whole thing. Yes, but once you get started changing them, it goes downhill very, very quickly.
Yeah, and that's what they're trying to do, is just undermine the whole foundation. Great again points out this, too, is a liberal strategy to usurp power that America's founders never intended politicians to have. An administration that ignores the Constitution when it doesn't serve its own agenda has a lot of power. And then Great again goes on to point out something else that's very interesting that we're seeing happen. There's a racial attack on the Constitution as well. It says this: the goal of the Constitution, and this is a quote, by the way, in this book, Great Again, and it's a paraphrase of what somebody from the Black Lives Matter people said. The goal of the Constitution was to make an agreement between factions known as states, which were built on the backs of black slaves. The people vowing to protect the Constitution are vowing to protect white supremacy and genocide. And then Mr. Fleury writes, that is a satanic lie. And it's true. And you have to remember, the Constitution makes everyone have to follow the rule of law. That's what it does. We can't forget that. It's a rule of law that everyone has to follow, no matter what your race, religion, sex. It's equal. But they're telling people it's not equal. That's a lie.
The Constitution specifically says that all men were created equal. That implies that there is a creator. A lot of those people don't believe that God even exists, so that part is irrelevant to them. If there's no one who created people equal, then they just think that there's a system in place without a God, a just God watching over us, and that system is oppressive and it's racist. You know, the punishment for the people who say things like that, they should be sat down in a room and for several hours they should just be questioned why they believe what they do. And it should be broadcast to the nation and their ignorance should be exposed, because they never get challenged on it. The media never asks them a question about, well, what specific part of the document actually is racist? Where can you point out that it's a racist document? They have no way of having any logic with what they're saying. And they need to be exposed on that. Otherwise, people just go along with it. That's what we're seeing.
It's emotional, and it gets to be mob rule. And Great again points out the Constitution is based on many biblical principles. And that's really what's being attacked, is the Bible. The framers of the Constitution said it worked, as you pointed out earlier, only if people had a certain measure of faith in God and the Bible. He says, our people have forsaken God, and God is full of wrath because of it, and he is cursing this land. And I think we see that happening. He says, this is quickly moving America toward a race war and rule by dictatorship or tyranny. And here we are now under a new administration. And they are, I suppose, on the other side of things, a little more on the conservative side. But they shouldn't have dictatorial powers either. And it's not a political issue. The point is, whoever comes into power, whichever side, the Constitution is supposed to hold them to the rule of law. And there are different branches of government that have different functions, checks and balances, so that you can't have a, you know, very conservative group come in and push all of their agenda, or a very liberal one come in and push all of their agenda, checks and balances, so it doesn't get out of hand one way or the other. That's the issue. So now that there's a more of a conservative, at least for now maybe, administration in there, do they want them to have dictatorial power and do whatever they want? Of course not. They're fighting against it. The media is attacking it now. They were fine with it when it was their guy. But see, the whole issue is when you cast off that rule of law, you're left to just the whims of the leaders. Nobody that doesn't work out well for anybody.
And they were fine with it when Barack Obama was in charge, and now it's going the other way and they don't like it. That's why they should have had the foresight to realize that, well, it's another swing in the other direction is coming, and you're not going to like it when that comes, when another administration takes power and they see the precedent set for them by the Obama administration. They can abuse that power very easily now. They can just point to the guy who was just in office a month or two before them, and they can say, well, they were doing it. Why can we not do the exact same thing? It is just total lawlessness. And like we said, the Constitution, it only rules a moral and religious people. The leaders should be moral and religious as well, and yet we don't see character coming up in any presidential election or senatorial election or whatever it is. The Proverbs say that when the righteous are in power, the people rejoice. There's nothing even discussed about that. If you have the chance to be a tyrant, why would you not take that chance? If you have the chance to seize absolute power and have total control over the greatest nation in history, why would you not take it? And yet we don't even consider the fact that it would take a deeply moral, high character person not to abuse that power.
And that's one of the things that made George Washington so great, because I remember people saying about him at the time that if he actually gives up power, he's like one of the greatest men we've ever seen.
They wanted him to be king.
Yeah.
They were begging him to be king, and yeah, he didn't take it. I would think that some of our recent leaders would want to be king if they had the opportunity, and some of them are really pushing the Constitution to the breaking point by just abusing it any chance that they have.
And if you just look at, say, the last two administrations, or the one we just had and then now the new one, is it beneficial to the country to have, okay, now there's a new healthcare law. Well, now we want to get rid of it. Now and you just keep going back and forth, and you're not sure on what the law is, and it's affecting people, and it's going here and going there. And is that the kind of cycle we want to get into, where every 4 years all the laws are redone and they go the opposite direction? I mean, what confusion. How can you move forward as a country if you don't have an overriding rule of law? And, of course, eventually what happens, as is pointed out here in Great Again, is you don't have a country anymore. You have a lawless dictators. You know, one comes in and then another comes in, or one stays, however it ends up going there. And, of course, there's a lot in this book about what you can expect to see happen there. But as is pointed out here, and again, this is the main point, it'd be easy to kind of look at this and read this and hear it and think, okay, so, you know, there's an evil side and a good side in politics, and that's not the case. There's the big enemy here, the real enemy, is pointed out in this book. And Mr. Fleury writes this: we must know our enemy in order to understand what is going on in America. Revelation 12 and verse 12 reveals that Satan is our deadly adversary. He is the one behind these dangerous developments. The devil is full of wrath, and he has gotten control of the radical left. You heard it. that's what it says. The fruits prove it. These people want to bring this system down, and they are deceived. And we see that, I think, probably even more now that they're not in power as much. He says, but the problem is much deeper than that. Our people don't understand their Bibles as they once did. They don't understand what many scriptures about Satan, the devil, say. He has an agenda against America, and it is prevailing because of America's sinful way of life. Only God can protect us from this powerful evil spirit. Why is America so weak? Study Leviticus 26. It is because of our sins. And that's the enemy that we face. Ourselves, our sins, and Satan the devil.
That's exactly right. And you mentioned how the political parties are so divided that the laws keep swinging back and forth every administration. Well, back in the early days of this country, when there was a consensus that biblical principles were right and that the country should be built on them, the political parties, even if you could call them different political parties, they basically had tiny differences in how the country should go. They basically were making tweaks to the laws. They were not swinging things back and forth. Now there's no mention of God anymore, and sure enough, there's just a gigantic division. The two parties are miles apart, and neither one of them could save the country if they had the chance. It's not going to work with people being completely separate from God like that. God is literally just against them at every step of the way.
Yeah, I mean, think about a debate where you ask questions like, okay, candidate so-and-so, explain your plan to pay off the $20 trillion debt. We're waiting. And wouldn't it be fair to that person? There's nothing they can do. It's getting out of hand, whether you look at the debt. You know, how are you going to stop hurricanes? You're not. I mean, how are you going to, you know, there's lots of things you could look at, and the problems are too big. They don't. And as is pointed out in this booklet and a lot of writings here at thetrumpet.com, the problems have a spiritual foundation. I mean, they're spiritual problems. And so you can't solve them with physical means. You can't legislate, you know, something that'll fix spiritual issues with physical laws.
And we do have tens of thousands of laws, maybe more, in this country. So many laws that people could never keep track of them all. The Ten Commandments are just 10 commandments. There's only 10 of them, and that's what every single action that we take could be based on. If we just kept it simple, there's a Bible and instruction manual for us to follow, and in this nation, we're just not following it. It's so simple. The Bible talks about natural disasters. It talks about getting out of debt because the borrower is slave to the lender. All these principles are in there, and we just don't look to the source of that knowledge.
That would be fascinating for somebody to run on a 10-point plan.
Oh, yeah.
And not, but kind of change, like, don't make it so obvious that it was the Ten Commandments. See if people would not notice. That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. I'm not sure why we're resting on the Sabbath day, though. That one, that would be hard to right. make people do. But it is something that really gets to the root of why we have so many problems here in the U.S. It's because of the lawlessness. And again, Leviticus 26 is mentioned, blessings for obedience, curses for disobedience. Do people believe that today? Well, the thing is, you know, a lot of times people laugh at that until it's, you can't laugh at it anymore because you've been overtaken by the curses. And in some parts of the country, in some people's lives, that's happening. It hasn't happened to the entire nation yet, but, you know, you don't have to be too creative in your thinking to see what is happening and what is coming.
People do have to start asking themselves now, where is the hope? If any natural disaster could come along and sweep away your house or take away your loved ones, where is the hope if there are circumstances like that beyond your control that could affect you at any time? You know, violence in the big cities. Who is protecting you from that? It's just like circumstances like that that are around the corner and they're just lurking there. Anyone could be affected by them. People have to wonder, is there something more to life than this, than always worrying about the $10,000 of debt that I have or the ailment that my wife is going through right now? There has to be hope. There has to be something beyond this life, but it is just hard to see that way when we have so many concerns and cares in this physical life.
Yeah, so this is a really great book, great again, and it's free at thetrumpet.com. We're going to go through it more throughout this week as well. And again, there's a lot more in it than we can cover, but Really important book, and again, even though it is pointing out some problems that have to be pointed out, as Grant was mentioning there, it does give a vision of hope. There is hope beyond the divisions and so forth that we see today, and that is the main thing to remember. But at the same time, the problems are being addressed as well, and it needs to be looked at. So make sure you get that book. Great again. It's at thetrumpet.com, and check it out. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.